Welcome to Dental Brain Crops. I'm your host, Chelsea Myers, and today I'm so excited for our guest. I have with us Dr. Nadeem Karambucks from the dental school at Tufts University, and I have so much respect for Nadeem, and I am so excited for our conversation. But Nadeem, welcome to the show today.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So I reached out to you, I would say a little over a year ago, because we have a lot of clients that graduate out of Tufts and they have such an affection for their experience. And so I reached out and I was like, you know, just, I would just love to learn about what you're doing there and what you're building and just a little more about the priorities and what's important, because it's making a real impact on the people that I'm working with. And I have been really taken by our conversations and getting to know you and then some of the teams that you're leading. It really is something special that you're building over at Tufts. So I'm just really excited for this conversation. I do want to know, though, before we get into some of the meat of our conversation today, could you just tell me, did you always have this dream that you were going to go to dental school and become a periodontist and then become the dean of Tufts University? Or did this take place over time that you got this realization that this would be your path?
Yeah, you know, it's been a real journey for me. I grew up in Kenya, East Africa. And sometimes people will ask me, well, you don't look like you're African. And just historically, you know, the British had Kenya as a colony, and they brought people from India in the early 1900s to build the railway line from the coast of Kenya to Uganda. And many of the Indians that they brought to Kenya ended up settling there because it was about a 10-year project to build this railway line really across the wilderness of Africa. So the Indians that live in Kenya now, it's about 5 or 6% of the population came there because of the British. But you're talking third, fourth generation. So I'm a third generation Kenyan of Indian origin. My parents were born in Kenya. And originally they're from Pakistan, but at that time it was all India. So I grew up in Kenya. And because it was a British colony, I went through the British system of education, which in a nutshell forces you to specialize from the age of 16 to 18, either in the sciences or arts. And I was good at the sciences, so I remember a conversation with my principal where he said, listen, if you're doing the sciences, you can either become a physician, a dentist, or a vet. And he said, I would advise you to become a dentist because it's a great profession. You can kind of have your own hours, own your own business. And based on that very naive conversation, I decided to become a dentist without much research. I came to the U.S. intending to go to dental school. I went to UMass Amherst undergrad, went to Harvard Dental School, and that's where my interest in perio really started. It was a combination of a chronic inflammatory disease, people with medical conditions that put them at risk for perio, the surgical aspects of perio that really fascinated me. And so I stayed at Harvard and did my perio certificate and master's degree there. But it was my passion at that time for teaching, clinical work, research that really started my academic career. And I've been a full-time academician doing research, working on patients for most of my career. And everything just progressively led to this opportunity to become the Dean of Tufts in 2019. So that's my journey in a nutshell.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So just kind of evolved over time, and you have a very impressive history. You know, I'm going to read it here so that I don't miss anything or mess it up. But, you've written over 100 papers, authored textbooks, lectured worldwide. You've received many recognitions and awards, both professionally and academically. And then just having heard some of the things that you've spoken on, and then also when I've been in your presence at your university, you do have a really eloquent presence. And when you're speaking and teaching, you have a definite gift for that. And so I think you're definitely right where you need to be and right where we all need you to be. And thank you for that. So tell me, what is it that you're seeing right now as the current challenges for dental schools and dental school leaders, both nationally and internationally? What are you seeing?
There was a recent survey done of dental deans in the country, and just to frame the context of what's happening in dental education, in the mid-80s when I went to dental school, there were around 55 dental schools, and we had about 10 plus dental schools that shut down around that time. And these were prominent dental schools that had a great tradition, a great history, kind of like Tufts, which is celebrating 155 years this year. So Northwestern, Emory, Georgetown, all shut down. Currently, we're at about 70 dental schools, so there's been a tremendous growth in terms of numbers of dental schools, and we're predicting we'll end up around 80. But if you were to survey all the deans right now of dental schools, and you were to ask them what keeps you up at night, I would say there are three or four things that would be identified at the top of that list. The first being faculty recruitment and retention. The second is developing the next group of people that will become the leaders in academia, chairs of departments, program directors, pre-doc directors. The third is really sustainability of our current model, because as you know, dental school is an expensive enterprise, both running a dental school but also going to dental school. And so when you've got students that are graduating with $350,000 of debt, you worry about the return on investment for those young professionals and what it means to them. Diversity, equity, inclusion certainly is up there in terms of thinking not only about your student body, but trying to match that with what the demographic of the country will be. So those are the main things that we think about as challenges within the dental education area.
Okay, and so, and we're all, in the same human resource condition. I don't think that you talked about retention and recruitment. That's not actually exclusive to dental. It's kind of across the board. And so, can you talk a little bit more about that? Both the challenges and then maybe areas of opportunity that you're seeing, at least right now?
So I think, when students are going through dental school, they're making decisions about where they want to be in practice, whether they want to specialize, do a GPR, AEGD. What we're trying to do in dental school is get them to think about a career in academic dentistry. Perhaps not immediately after they graduate, because they've got to start their practices, think about their personal lives, et cetera, balance the amount of debt that they have. But if we can plant a seed of interest at that young age, there will be a time, I think, when those practitioners will want to give back half a day a week to begin with, and eventually, hopefully, transition out of practice into academia. We're lucky in that we do have a lot of foreign graduates that come to the US to specialize in the area of prosthodontics, perio, et cetera. And a lot of them, after they're finished with their graduate residency programs, do want to stay in the US but can't practice immediately. So one pathway for them to stay is to work in a dental school, where obviously they can teach and kind of begin their careers here. So one pipeline for us in the specialty areas is certainly people that come here to specialize that want to stay. Some schools are very creative in some of the ways that they're able to also keep US trained practitioners on faculty. So here at Tufts, for example, we have many people that are here half time. So they kind of work 2.5 days. They get their university benefits, like medical and dental, by being here a half time. And then they have the benefits of practicing on the outside and earning a good competitive salary as well. So it's those kind of innovations and creative things that I think schools can do. You can certainly do those in private, that in private schools like our school. Some of the state schools, it's very restricted because if you're a state employee, you can't really be in private practice. But those are some of the things. The last thing I'll say is that for any dentists that are thinking about transitioning out of their practices, especially if it's kind of in their mid-50s, having an academic career at that stage of your career is really great. What I see with practitioners that transition into dental academia is they love to give students the knowledge that they've had in terms of clinical dentistry over the years. The other piece that they really enjoy is socializing with the other faculty, thinking about things, talking together, collaborating. So those are the positives for people that transition from practice into academia. I would say the one frustration they do have is working in an academic institute is not like being in your own private practice where you make all your own decisions. So for example, you have to take all the training that we have to give everyone, HIPAA, OSHA, and all of that. And that can sometimes be frustrating. And we have to calibrate the faculty to say, we know that you do a ton of stuff in practice, but we're basically training novices in the clinic, and you really have to teach the basics of dentistry. So those are some of the things I think that we can do to continue to encourage people to have good careers in academics.
Yeah, so a couple of things come to mind when you're talking about that. When you were saying the first route where if you have a new graduate who's not able to practice yet but can stay in the States by teaching, I was thinking about the tremendous benefit that would be because, you know, when we talk about building culture and professional development and leadership development in my world, one of the things that I'm constantly consulting on is the importance of the people you surround yourself with.
Yeah.
And so by nature of being in that university setting, you would have access to a tremendous amount of resources just in the peers that you'll be working alongside and the leaders that you'll be working under. That's a lot, a wealth of knowledge that you can use as you're developing the rest of your career path. And same on the flip side, you know, if you're exiting dentistry, a lot of people still have a lot of aspirations and financial goals that they're still working toward. And there are a lot of opportunities within dental, even if you're not chair side. And so I love that opportunity for people.
Right. And, you know, the other thing that dental schools really have done a good job at is thinking about faculty development because, you know, we're trained as clinicians and teaching students is a very different skill set. Assessing them is a very different skill set. And so most schools have done a very good job about faculty development at the department level. But more and more, we're seeking developing people in terms of leadership skills, like you said. And certainly we've engaged with you on, you know, things like an all-day workshop, not only for chairs and deans, but if you remember, we also had pre-doc directors and program directors that came in. And the question is how to connect kind of what you might call mid-level management with top management to make sure that everyone's on the same page, messages are being delivered, but that you're already giving people a skill set that they need to lead a team of what are their peers and colleagues and to get them to do, you know, what is good for the students and the patients that they see in the clinic. And then there's a lot of national development type programs that faculty can get sent to. Some are with their professional societies like the American Academy of Perio or Pediatric Dentistry. But the American Dental Education Association, which is our professional association, also does a lot of great faculty development, not only at the annual meeting, but really on an ongoing basis. And they've got special programs with other organizations on giving chairs and deans and program directors exactly the skill set that they need to be successful in what is, you know, a very challenging environment that we're all working in coming out of COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and the other thought that I had was it really is just food for thought for anybody who's interested in potentially teaching, because sometimes when I'm working with clients, they get to a point of frustration or anxiety or fear in their practice. And then they'll say, you know, I think I'm just going to quit doing dentistry and go teach. And that's okay. That's one way to get there. But I would love to see, and you know, you have a lot of teaching experience and I have a background in teaching as well. And so the problem is when you feel forced into it or like it's a last resort, it's not being approached with the same energy or the same outlook that it can provide, the actual benefits that are really there. It's a very rich experience, as we've just described. And so I love planting this seed early on that if you have any interest in teaching, you know, try it out. You can go participate or volunteer and just see if you like being in that academic environment and then what opportunities might be there for you.
Yeah, and you know, I see so much kind of reward in some of those faculty in terms of interacting with what is the future of our profession. I mean, the impression that you leave for the students that you interact with can either be very positive or very negative. And it's up to us to really convey to the students, given that they're making a huge investment, not only financially, but commitment-wise and time-wise to our profession. We really have to portray in a very positive way, despite the stresses that we face as educators, because that influence is what really carries forward. I mean, I think, obviously, in this day and age, with all of the challenges we're facing in a lot of different dimensions, it's very easy to dwell on the negative. Mm-hmm. But you have to have a mindset, I think, that really has to shift somewhat in front of students, staff, and patients, because they tend to absorb everything that they see, not only in terms of verbal communications, but also just your day-to-day, communications around what's going on. And so I think that piece is something that we have to continue to push and stress as well. But, the faculty that are there every day that just show the joy and excitement of the success of their students is pretty amazing, because I think if you think about it, dentistry is very unique, especially in dental school. No matter how much training you do in year one and year two, and how much preclinical learning you do, there comes a time when you tell the students that here's your 10 to 15 patients, and you're actually their primary care provider. And not only are you going to learn how to communicate and listen to them and come up with diagnosis and treatment planning, but you're actually going to be doing microsurgical procedures on these patients within a month or two. And that's a daunting challenge to anyone. I mean, that doesn't happen in medicine until you're a second or third or fourth year medical resident, that you get that kind of responsibility that early on in your career. And what's amazing to me is to see a third year student that is starting in clinic, that is anxious and stays up all night thinking about the first procedure they're doing on a patient. Giving local anesthetic is a big challenge. Putting a rubber dam on is a big challenge. And within a year, that confidence has grown so much, and that becomes secondary to them. And, it's very much the faculty that are chairside with the students that also give them that kind of confidence in what they're learning when they're in clinic. And then, obviously fourth year is just a huge jump forward to seeing, what you're creating, which is a competent oral healthcare provider who can go out and practice once they pass their license right after dental school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're so right. It's really important, those mentors that we have and those teachers we have along the way. When I'm doing leadership development, sometimes I'll ask my clients to reflect on a teacher or leader that they've had that made a really strong impact on them, because we don't remember all of the little nuances of our days or even our weeks or years, but we do remember how we felt in those experiences. And so when I can have someone pinpoint a leader that was really impactful to them and what were the traits that allowed them to feel safe in that person's environment and feel like they could develop and become more of whatever they were wanting to be, we can really carve a path to who that client wants to become. And I know you have some just fantastic leaders on your team as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned the stressors that students have in dental school, and one of them being the cost. What types of other things are you seeing with students as they're going throughout dental school that can weigh on them, be really taxing?
Well, I think you hear a lot about, the stresses that students go through even before they get to college and during college, and those are very real. You could say for a variety of reasons, the competitiveness of getting into programs. Certainly, people talk about the impact of social media on children and young adults as they develop, and how absorbing that can be. Obviously, they're growing up in a very different kind of a environment, very different kind of medium. The way they experience their education is so different from the way that we experienced it. During COVID, there was a shock in the system at every single level, both in dental school in terms of affecting what students could get done clinically. Year one and year two became virtual learning without the social connection and context, lost for a generation of students. And obviously in college as well, there was a gap. And I think you hear anecdotally from dental educators on how the students that 2 years ago were affected are now in dental school. And there seem to be some perceived gaps that have been described by people anecdotally. I think when you take all of that combined, what we're seeing is on the positive side, that students are much more open to seeking help. I think there was a time when culturally you said you just got to kind of bite your tongue and work your way through whatever difficulties you're facing, no matter how bad they are. But on the other hand, the ask for the resources is so great that a lot of schools are struggling at the undergraduate and health profession level to actually find resources for health and wellness for students. In dental schools, I think being able to provide an open environment where students feel safe, where they can talk about issues that they're facing. It's not only the financial, but it's also the challenges of living in a city and affording, day-to-day things that you really need. We have several students that are single moms, for example. So, you're also dealing with raising a young family by yourself as well as going to dental school. So all of those things are very real. And the question for us is not only what kind of professional resources can you give students, and certainly the dental school and other schools at Tufts do provide that, and sometimes it's virtual, but at least it's accessible. We do have someone full-time here as well that can give some resource, but that's limited given the volume of people that need that help. The other things that we've tried to do is really instill in our students that this is a career where there are going to be stresses, both personal and professional, throughout your lifetime. And a lot of times in dental school, you're so focused on grades and getting clinical procedures done that by the time you graduate, it's very late, I would say, to start practicing good health and wellness kinds of activities. So what we've done is we actually started bringing the students to dental school a month earlier than when they started. So in the old curriculum, they would basically come in at the end of July, have 1 or 2 days, actually at the end of August, have 1 or 2 days of orientation, and go into a very busy curriculum in September. So we now bring them in a month earlier. That month is relatively light in terms of curriculum. We have a course called Introduction to the Profession. And a big part of Introduction to the Profession is how to balance health and wellness. And so we have a full-time faculty member that talks to students about good practices. But it's not only just about doing it in that first month, it's really starting to get students to think about how to integrate that into the stressful periods in dental school. So the faculty member might go to the first year students right before an exam's about to begin. Students are all getting geared up and anxious about starting the exam. And she says, for 5 minutes, we're just going to stop our minds from racing and thinking about what's about to happen and just focus on our breathing and relaxation. She'll go right before a preclinical competency and talk to them about that. We have morning huddles with our faculty right before the day begins in clinic, and she'll stop by to reinforce that practice. So all of that balance, I think, is really important for students to start learning in dental school so they can kind of continue to rely on those kinds of practices when they're out. And I always tell students that, you have to make time for those things because those are probably more important in a way than being in practice all the time and thinking about the volume of patients that you have to treat. Because if you want a long career, that's what's going to really help you create that pathway to have a very long and healthy career.
Yeah, and I know about your program, and I just think that's so important because, yeah, to your point, you're only as effective as you're able to be present. And the second that she slows them down and allows people to, or invites them to identify what they're thinking in that moment and where their energy's at, we can't be identified with the thought if we can identify the thought, right? It becomes now something we're observing instead of a casualty of. But we're going so fast and we have so many pressures that if we don't intentionally stop and direct our focus, it all feels very encompassing. And of course, you know, whatever stage of life we're in, personally or professionally, it's the hardest thing we've ever done because we've never done it before. And so you're right. Those are daily strength training practices that have to be in place. It's unlike going to dental school or completing a task. You don't check it off the list and then never do it again. It's something that needs to be done daily, just like drinking water and eating food. We need to take our mindset. Successful people.
Go ahead.
I was going to just say the most successful people that I've ever known in business and life and leadership, they all have very intentional routines. And I was just actually going to ask you about yours, what things are in place in your world that must be, that you make no exception on, like those need to be there for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think as a student and as a resident, I was very focused on what I needed to do really to be successful. And it wasn't, you know, I recall it wasn't till probably about 2 or 3 years that I was out of my residency. And as a young faculty member, I used to have dental students that actually assisted me on Monday, Wednesday nights in the faculty practice. And I remember distinctly one of them, and you know, those were great settings because the connections I made with those students while treating patients and chatting with them about their personal lives and struggles were really eye-opening for me as a young faculty member. But it also allowed them a certain amount of closeness to someone who they thought, wow, you know, this guy's pretty serious and he's a perio professor and whatever. And they were able to see a personal side of you that I think, you know, they could connect with. So these students challenged me to run a half marathon. And unknowingly, I said, fine, I'll run it with you. And then I had to get serious about training. And it was the first time that when I got on that routine of I have to do my short runs during the week, and I have to do a longer run on the weekends for like 12 weeks in order to actually finish this thing. That was the very first time that I kind of set aside what I would call programmed time, where I had to make time during a busy schedule to do that. And it was a habit that I think throughout my life has sustained me, whether it's training for a half marathon or a full marathon. And then as I've gotten older, cutting back on that activity because my knees are getting cranky. But, you know, I find time to walk, do yoga. I have a Peloton at home that I use as well. And, you know, as I get older, obviously, I'm trying to adjust my habits and my mindset as well to, you know, what are age-related types of issues that we all deal with cranky joints and aches and pains. So even today, for example, you know, we had the Dean's holiday party and I had about 30 minutes right after it, which was unscheduled time. And despite the fact it's a cold day in Boston, I put on my jacket and got out there and did a quick 30-minute walk just to disconnect from, you know, all the stuff that you have to deal with. And so that I think is, that balance is important to establish really as soon as you can. You know, at the same time, a lot of us are balancing raising families and getting on with our personal lives as well. And that's obviously critically important as well. But, you know, creating that time alone for yourself professionally and personally and getting into these other kind of hobbies or habits or exercises, I think is really fundamental to a long and successful career.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I am interested, you know, we've talked about wellness and we talked a little bit about this, but specifically when we mentioned the pandemic or COVID, you know, I think it was last year, Brené Brown said at a conference that we're not adjusted yet. We're not okay yet.
Yeah.
We want to be, and that is the intention. And I would say even a year later, I'm definitely still seeing in my work with clients that there are residual impacts, and I'm not sure when that will subside. What are you seeing as far as dental schools and dental education's impact from COVID?
You know, when I think about the challenges that we faced as a school during COVID, you know, it involved very hard decisions as a leader in terms of furloughs and cutbacks that impacted a community that had been so close in terms of working together, providing education, providing care. So our community not only dealt with uncertainty in terms of the dental school shut for 3 months, what does this mean for us? But we've lost, you know, close members of our community. And we've done a lot of surveys on kind of what we call the culture of care. We have a culture of care committee. You know, my frustration as a leader is it's something that I can't just flip a switch and say, you know, you should all be feeling relatively good about where we are, right? There are people around us that are getting laid off, there are industries that are suffering. But that message is just not going to resonate if I keep saying that. And so the work that we have in front of us is difficult. It's hard. We have an outside facilitator working who's done a lot of work now, meeting with small groups to really pick up what the sentiment is of the staff and the faculty. You know, what are the perceptions of the workplace? And, you know, it comes down to things like wanting to feel a part of a community, wanting transparency, wanting better communication, wanting to be a part of the solution. And again, it's going to take hard work to really get that balance on getting that buy-in, getting the trust. And I think the message is that no one person can kind of fix this. It has to be a team effort from, you know, top to bottom and bottom to top. And in fact, one of the themes that we were talking about at a recent dean's retreat was exactly that. And one of the books that they gave us, which I haven't been able to read yet, is titled The Future of Work is Human. You know, transforming company culture for a post-pandemic world. So I think that theme of, you know, we're not going to be the same. It isn't the same. But how do we create organizations that are actually much more functional now, understanding that framework? I don't have the answer for that. But I think as a leader, no matter how difficult it is to hear the message, you have to commit to that work in order to get beyond what continues to be obviously pain points for communities. And, you know, it's not just Tufts Dental School, it's really across dental education. It's across, like you said, many different kinds of organizations.
Yeah, you know, you talked about people wanting to be a part of a community and that piece being really important. And of course it is, because when there's so many unknowns, we need to know what can we count on then. We don't know, you know, tomorrow they might shut down schools and churches and all kinds of ability to do the normal things we do, but we need to know what we can count on. And a lot of times that comes down to our relationships. And, you know, Amy Edmondson over at Harvard has done a tremendous amount of research on the importance of psychological safety to create productive teams. And when you look at the data and you talk to individuals, even when I talk to individuals about, you know, what is a team to you? Where's a place that you want to be long term? They're not saying somewhere where my friends are or somewhere where my tribe is. They're saying somewhere that feels like home, somewhere that feels like family. And in families, we don't always know what's coming, but we know, you know, with our family members that we're the closest to, we know how we feel around them. And that's someplace that we're safe and someone we can count on and that will be there for us as we go through the unknown. So, yeah, bravo for having your eye on that ball, because that is so important to be able to offer your students and faculty. So talk to me now about, you know, transitioning. So we've got all these stressors, but then we get confident. We've got resources in place. What are you seeing as dental students transition from school to early years of being practitioners?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of obviously excitement when you graduate because it's a long and hard road to get through dental school. You know, once the students are in clinic, they say it goes extremely fast. You know, you have a certain cohort of students that are going to be in post-residency programs, whether it's a 1 year GPR, AGD, orthodontics. And obviously, that cohort are very excited at starting in new schools, starting their kind of postgraduate work. So for them, you know, I think they're future is a little bit clearer. I got to move to New York, get going in my residency. And you know, we hold receptions at a lot of big meetings. And just recently, I was at the Greater New York Dental Meeting where we have hosted a reception. And we probably had about 20 recent graduates from 2019 through just this year, 2023, that stopped by at that reception. Many of them were still in residencies in the New York area. Some of them had finished residencies and were starting practice. But the overwhelming message was, if I had to choose going to dental school and being where I am right now, I would definitely do it again. Most of them felt fairly confident in terms of the skills that they got from Tufts and how that translated into being in residency, with an understanding that no matter where you are, you're going to have certain procedures that you've done a lot more of and certain that you've done a little bit less of. But being supported within that residency program to continue to grow and excel was a sentiment I think that most of them conveyed to me as well. The ones that had finished residency and were either working as associates, again, felt pretty good about that. There were a couple, one D19 and one D20, who were already thinking about, you know, when can I buy my practice? One of them that had just bought one in Queens, one that was thinking about, I think, actually moving closer to the Boston area. So, you know, those kinds of success stories that early on, the confidence that people were feeling in their residencies, for me as a dean, is so rewarding to see. And then, you know, 5, 10 years out as well, I hear some good success stories. So, for example, this summer we went up to Maine to visit a few of our alums. We had a husband-wife couple that met at Tufts. They graduated in 2013. They've been out 10 years. They're in three or four, or own three or four DSO offices. Very successful. They love their practices, the metrics they can pull up. You know, the services they provide to a vulnerable population in Maine. They have full-time technicians in their offices, CT scans, the latest technology. So there I saw a young couple that is really loving what they're doing. You know, financially, they're starting to do well. They even gave a very generous donation back to the dental school, which is nice to see, you know, 10 years out. And then the next day, we visited a very different practice, a graduate who's going to work in his dad's practice. His dad had just retired in a very small community up there. But he felt very comfortable with a one-chair operation with two chairs for dental hygiene, because he's now got a generation of people that his father has treated that feel so comfortable and confident in that setting that he knows he's going to have a very well-balanced personal life and professional life in that kind of a setting. So also seeing people 5, 10 years out and seeing, you know, what they're doing and how different it is, DSO versus private versus group practice, and continue to hear, you know, the successes that those graduates are having, is also nice to reflect on as a dean.
That is so rewarding. I'm sure that's wonderful. I do see you all over, you know, on LinkedIn and other posts about, you know, you're visiting your alums, and I think that's so neat. I know that people speak, like I said it in the beginning, really highly of Tufts. It's near and dear to their heart. You know, so what I'm kind of picking up on too is what you're saying is that there's all different types of very successful stories. You know, once you graduate, it becomes really individual, even though we're all dental school graduates, not me, but the people we're speaking of are all dental school graduates. It then becomes really individual, and you might go off to own, you know, multi-location DSO, or you might be an associate, and both are very successful. It's just, what does that mean to you? What are you wanting out of your life?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, people often ask me about why I chose academics and what were the challenges of being a full-time academic. And I say, you know, you've got a lot of choices, right, in terms of your career, and you've got to feel like the balance of what you want is something that you can get. And for me, it was the diversity of the experience. I didn't think that over a 30, 40 plus year career that I would want to be in a solo practice by myself. I felt like what I got in my residency was I can have provide clinical care, do research, teach the next generation of dental students. And I really loved each one of those. And I said, that's kind of the environment that I want to be in. And then at that point, it's some very personal choices about, you know, the kind of lifestyle you want to live and how quickly you want to try to pay your debt off. You make some sacrifices early on, I think. And once your debt is paid off, you've got a lifetime of earning ahead of you and a good balance ahead of you, you know, career-wise. It's really something that I tell students technically can't be taken away from you. You know, you're not necessarily going to be laid off. You've got a license to provide care and practice for really the rest of your life. And I think it's hard to see when you're out early on. But those are the things that I think we can convey to young graduates, no matter how hard the choices are, how hard the struggle is. It's not that I think graduating today and going into practice is easy either. There are a lot of stresses. But having said that, you know, it still is a great profession and great career to be in, despite all the changes that we're seeing. And I think, again, it's the success stories that I see that continue to reinforce that, you know, for me at least as a dean, when I speak to people that are coming to dental school, in dental school, and then, you know, leaving as well.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's the most exciting time to be in dentistry. You mentioned changes, and of course, some of them are, you know, scary or different, but I think it's the most exciting time to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the opportunities are just endless. Well, Nadine, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to add to this conversation before we close out?
Yeah, why don't you ask me why I've got elephants behind my head?
Why do you have elephants behind you?
Well, partly because I've got a good friend in Kenya that took the photos, but Jumbo is the mascot of Tufts University. So I feel like I've come home when I have Jumbo behind me all the time, both in terms of having grown up in Kenya, but closing the loop to come back to a school that has Jumbo as its mascot.
Well, I'm so glad to have Jumbo in the background. It will live on forever. Thank you. It was so good to have you. I always love talking to you. Thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, great to catch up, and thanks for all the work that you're doing.
I appreciate you joining me for today's episode. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit dentallife.coach for access to additional coaching tools, as well as more episodes to help you create the dental life you truly desire.